You're listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of February 26th, 2013. Hey, punk fans, welcome to the Punk News Podcast Roundtable for the week of February 26th, 2013. I'm Brian Yancey, and I'm on the roundtable with managing editor Adam White.
Well, this is such a subdued opening compared to last week.
Yes.
It's very, very
and I'm also relaxing. Here with features editor John Gentile.
What's that?
Perfect. The 90s are alive and well, I can see, in all of us.
I never left the 90s. I'm stuck in 97.
Are you stuck in 97 or are you stuck in a year earlier than that?
Because sometimes I feel 92. Like you're... 92 was the jam, let me tell you. 92 was the jam.
All right, if you say 92, I was thinking like even further back. I mean, we always talk about how...
Oh, you mean before the 90s, like, you mean? Oh, I thought I was confined to the 90s. I was thinking like 90s. Like because you said we're stuck in the I said I was stuck in the 90s. And so I thought we had established a paradigm where I was stuck in the 90s. So I selected 92 because that's the last year that Cube put out a good album. It's right before the Chronic. Public Enemy's still hot. KRS-One is just about to go solo. You know, punk rock-wise, not a whole lot's happening in 92. Not so much.
No.
Yeah. So, but if I had to go back to a year,
everybody's listening to grunge. Yeah.
I'd probably go to like 81 if I had to go back in time. 81, yeah.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
But then I wouldn't have what's that?
That's like I don't think that existed in 81.
I could there's start probably, it.
You could. You could Back to the Future to that and take it back with you and you know, make that your own and potentially turn that into something a little more lucrative, but who knows?
So, okay, here we go. Punk rock that came out in 1992. It's sort of a mixed year here. Social D's Somewhere Between Heaven and Hell.
Nope.
Green Day's Kerplunk, but I don't think did anyone really know about those Green Day records before Green Day broke and then everyone went back and like, I liked Kerplunk better than Dookie.
In the Bay Area they did, but only
I guess. What else? Bad Religion's Generator was that year.
It's a pretty good one.
The Gits, French and the Bully. I like that one.
Yeah.
But, what else? Screeching Weasel's Wiggle.
No.
Oh, no. Mondo Bizarro by the Ramones.
Guar was getting hot in 92.
They were indeed.
This is why people tune into our podcast, to find out what punk records came out in 1992, because you all can't use Google.
No. Punks don't know how to Google things, right?
Google
this isn't even on the internet right now.
So they don't know what they're going to want to know by the time our show comes out. Or something.
Yes. Yes. I think that's
what is that?
Oh, God. So what's going on this week?
The punkest band on the universe, Metallica, announced the second year of their Orion Music and More Festival, which is going to be in Detroit this year, on June 8th and 9th. It was in Atlantic City last year. For some reason they moved it to Detroit this year. It could be a case where they're going to have it at somewhere different every year, kind of like the Super Bowl or, I don't know, something else like that. But there are a lot of bands playing, and it should be noted that Metallica curate this festival. They presumably pick a lot of the lineup themselves, and there are a bunch of bands playing that interest punk news readers, like the Dropkick Murphys and the Bronx and Japan Druids and Rise Against and Flag, which of course is Keith Morris, Chuck Dukowski, Bill Stevenson, and Stefan Egerton playing the music of Black Flag.
And Des Kadena, baby.
Is he in that now? I thought he was in. "Quote unquote Black Flag."
No, there was some miscommunication, not by Punk News. Flag is Keith Morris, Chuck Tukowski, Dez Cadena on second guitar, Steven Egerton, and Bill Stevenson. By contrast, Black Flag is Ron Reyes, Greg Ginn, and I kid you not, Dale Nixon, and some guy on drums that I never heard of.
Okay, so Dez is in this, and he's not in
right,
whatever
the reason,
Black Flag is right now.
The reason some websites were confused was because Dez was in Black Flag in 2003.
Right.
But now he's just in Flag.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that's cleared up. So yeah, that's kind of cool. The festival again is June 8th and 9th. You can see the full lineup on Punk News. Not sure if you guys have any thoughts on this, but I'm more curious about these curated music festivals have kind of become a thing in the last few years, where either a band will start their own festival like Metallica did, or you know, some festival will ask a band to curate the festival for them. All Tomorrow's Parties has done this for a few years now. I want to say the Afghan Whigs curated the most recent one, which probably wasn't a good move on their part, but that's besides the point. But it got me thinking about, and I posed this question on our social networks, the Punk News Twitter account and the Punk News Facebook page, is that what band or artist would you like to see kind of curate a festival and pick the lineup and headline it, kind of in the same vein that Metallica is doing this? And we got some pretty cool responses. Somebody did say the Melvins, John Gentile, on Twitter, so which I agree with. I think that would be really great.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
But it's kind of all over the place. Somebody said Rancid. I'm not sure how well that would go over. A couple of people said Rise Against, which might be kind of cool, despite Rise Against's, you know, lack of good songs in the last, I don't know, half decade or so.
That could be a really boring festival, let me tell you.
I mean, if all the bands sounded like Rise Against, yes, it would be the most boring punk festival ever conceived. But somebody said Descendants, that would be cool. Somebody said Fishbone, which is interesting. Mikey Erg, Fantomas, which would be kind of cool as well. The Clash, if only, says somebody. And there's just a bunch of different ones. And one person on our Facebook page said Andrew WK, which I think might be my favorite thus far. I think that would be a pretty great festival to attend for a lot of reasons. But what do you guys think about this lineup? And is there a band in particular that you think you would like to see curate a festival like this, besides the Melvins?
You have to pick this strategically where you know that the band is going to pick interesting stuff themselves, so you get like, you know, a pretty kind of cool mix of what's going on. So what you don't want to do is you don't want to pick a band that is so kind of stuck in the middle of their genre that you know what they're going to pick. And that's why I was like, oh, Rise Against would be boring, because it's not that I find Rise Against boring, which I do. It's that I kind of get the feeling that the kind of bands that Rise Against would pick would kind of all sound in that vein of stuff and that, right? That, you know, that you don't want to see like the same band play 20 times in a row. So you want to pick something that like kind of like straddles between a couple genres that you're a fan of. So that's why I'm like, for this, I'm thinking I would want to go with a festival curated by either, I got three and they all kind of serve the same purpose in my head. I want to say the Thermals, Pissed Jeans, or Titus Andronicus. And the reason is that they're all bands that, you know, they play kind of punkish music, but they're more kind of come from the indie family, at least the labels that they run in. They've all made a lot of noise in the last few years where they've talked about punk as, you know, as some sort of ideal that they're not ashamed as a band to talk about. You know, Titus Andronicus did this all over the place when their latest record came out, but like Pissed Jeans had a bunch of stuff in a recent Spin interview that was kind of to that effect. So you figure that these are guys that have been sitting around, maybe not so much the Thermals here, but they're guys that, you know, have been sitting around thinking about what punk rock is, which means that if they had to go curate a bunch of bands to come in, you figure they would try to exercise that thought process in the picks that they do. And you wouldn't necessarily get like, you wouldn't get like 20 bands that sound like Pennywise or something like, right? You'd get a bunch of stuff that kind of fits more into the spirit of it than necessarily the sound of it, specifically because these bands aren't bands that like have like 10 records on Epitaph or something. So that's where I'm going with. I'm just going to, I'll go like, so Piss Jeans or Titus.
Yeah, okay. I gotta say, Metallica, for being pretty crappy for the past 20 years or so, they've got pretty good taste. I gotta say, like, well, Flag, first of all, which is like my favorite band of this year so far, but also they've got like Tomahawk, which is cool, which is Mike Patton's one of his like 14 bands. They've got they've got Death, which I'm not sure if that's the heavy metal Death or the
early punk Detroit Death.
That's cool, man. I would see either Deaths, but I think this is probably the cooler Deaths. They've got Fiddlar, which is a pretty like new punkish garage rockish band. I've seen them live; they're pretty cool. So they've got a lot of interesting, and also I mean, they've got Joy from Aldehyde, which I'm not a huge fan of necessarily. Oh no, it's Joy Formidable. Is that a different band than Joy from Aldehyde? I don't know.
Yeah, oh, I don't even know if Joy Formaldehyde is a band. But
it is. It's like one of these Pitchfork bands, and people love them. And I thought like I'm like, whoa, Metallica's gone really indie, you know, really Pitchfork. I'm impressed, but I guess I'm not because it's not that band. So I take that back. I'm digging the lineup. I would go to this. I gotta say, as for like bands that I like to see curate, I would love to see Henry Rollins curate it because he's got a radio show once a week. And he plays all these different bands, and not like just like American bands or UK bands, like African and Indian and Arabic and like even like Japanese bands and South American, and they're all so good. So like if you had Henry Rollins, he would have some classic punk, some new punk. He would have like some like African funk group, and it would, and like some jazz dudes. It would be pretty awesome. I'd also have Jello Biafra, just because his taste of mine don't lie as much as me and Henry Rollins or Henry Rollins and I, but Jello has such a unique, specific taste. These obscure bands that are always very weird and very interesting, that it wouldn't all be good music, but it would all be very interesting and educational music. Lastly, I think I would choose, and people are going to laugh at me, but I would say SZA Crack from Leftover Crack, because his influences are like, because he's a huge fan of like death metal and death rock and crust punk, which I like all that kind of stuff. So he likes Amoebics, he likes Rudimentary Peni, Subhumans, all that stuff. But he also really likes hip-hop, like The Coup, and he also really likes, who else, Dead Prez, and all those other different groups. So it would be a very interesting mix. So I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a pretty good choice.
This is a good choice for sure.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, that's...
Here's a question about this, and I don't want to get like too cynical about these kind of things, but like, is this really something that Metallica has like put together, or is this more something that like they've got their brand name on, and there's like some office full of people that puts these things together?
I mean, it's. I mean, I don't think anybody really knows. It's kind of impossible to tell, but. You know, I didn't go last year, but you know, from what I could tell from the few people I heard that did go, the Metallica guys were kind of around like the festival grounds the entire weekend. It wasn't like they were like in some trailer half a mile away the entire time. They were interacting with fans. It was apparently like a really like fan friendly experience.
That's cool. I'm not expecting
If you're a diehard Metallica fan, yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean so, like I'm expecting them to like set up the stages or anything. I'm just curious because it's the kind of thing that like it's easy to see how if this like curated festival thing becomes like the moneymaker, how, you know, you could see some like venture capitalist somewhere going, I'm just going to start a series of music festivals curated by whoever, and they don't actually have anything to do with it, and we'll use it to sell, you know, Yoo-hoo and stuff. So.
Listen, the Yoo-hoo market has gone down, boys. What can we do? We'll get Metallica to help us.
Right.
I don't see why it wouldn't reach that point eventually. Unfortunately, I think you kind of. It's a little. It's something that could definitely happen where somebody sees this and sees that it's successful and. You know, wants to slap their brand name on it and hire a band to curate the festival, which, you know, if it ends up being cool, it's fine. You know, it's whatever. But yeah, as far as I can tell, this is kind of, I don't want to say it's Metallica's baby, because I'm sure they get help with it. Based on what I know about Metallica, which is probably more than most people, actually, and you know, the several times I've seen the documentary Some Kind of Monster, which I highly recommend checking out if you haven't seen it. They're weird dudes, and they need help with things like this, I imagine. So I'm sure it's not all of them, but I want to believe that they're very involved with it as well. So
did you like Death Magnetic?
I did. Not far from their best, but definitely better than most anything they've done.
Yeah, it was acceptable, at least.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so there you go. That's maybe the last time we'll talk about Metallica for a bit. So let's talk about Alkaline Trio. They have a new song out. It's called Tortured Doctor. It's going to be on the band's upcoming full-length My Shame Is True, which as we denoted on an earlier episode of the podcast, is a bad punk pun based on the Elvis Costello record My Aim Is True, and it's coming out April 2nd on Epitaph. You could find the song on Spin premiered it, but I think it's up on YouTube now as well, in the form of a lyric video, Adam White's favorite thing.
Woo!
And this song is pretty good. I kind of like it. It's got I enjoy the organ parts. They kind of remind me of Bad Astronaut just a little bit. And, you know, the chorus is kind of dumb, but it's a punk song. Dumb choruses are okay. And, I have no problem with this.
I actually don't hate this song, which is cool for me and the Alkaline Trio, because that's about as good as we get.
Yes.
Now, okay, there are two things, though, is that one, it sort of made me want to go listen to Rancid's Blood Clot. And then I started thinking about Rancid's Blood Clot, and I thought, wow, I really like that song. And wow, that song's got a lot more energy than this. And then I just wanted to go listen to Rancid's Blood Clot. So they have that against them. But
I never made that connection, but I can see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I mean, this sounds like the kind of song that, like, I'm being overly critical because I'm always overly critical of the Alkaline Trio because I really don't get it. If this was like a Bouncing Souls song, and, you know, it's one of these bands that, like, you know, is completely fun to me, and I would totally be all over it. So, you know what? If the Bouncing Souls wrote this song, I'd be like, that's such a fun Bouncing Souls song. So I'm gonna say I'm okay with this. It's fun enough. Cool. I'm good.
I agree with Adam's test, if you will. When I'm determining.
Hello?
Oh, did we lose John?
Did we lose John? I want to know what's the test.
Yeah, what is the test?
Shit. John. The test. Oh man. So what do we have to do now? We have to do a little song and dance while we get the technical gears of the show worked out.
Yeah, this is how the sausage is made.
Oh God.
Unfortunately. I don't know.
How's the weather in Philadelphia?
It's kind of cold and rainy.
Yeah, same in Niagara.
Yep.
Mm.
Yep.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Well, how about this? Let's break for a song. We'll see if we can get John back.
Yeah, let's do that.
So, all right, okay. So, this is a song. I was on Twitter the other day, as I often am, and a guy named Derek, who plays in a local St. Catharines punk band called Dead to Rights, kind of popped up on my Twitter feed, and he was like, "Hey, fuck you, support your local scene." So, okay, so this is a Dead to Rights song. They have a record out called "The Beauty of Flaw." It's it came out last year, the year before, something like that. I don't have the year in front of me. October 2012. There you go. And you can download it for whatever you want to pay for it on Bandcamp right now. This song is called Scars. It appears on that record. So check it out. And if you want to find out more about the band, it is deadtorights.bandcamp.com. So this song is Scars.
We're dumb attraction. The bookie dumb a similar action. They are carrying you. So true.
You know, Adam, I agree with your test for determining whether or not a song is inherently good or not, because I often submit bands to what I call the Tom Waits test. I think Tom Waits is a little overrated, but a lot of the critics are always like, oh, he's a genius with words, he's a genius with words. So anytime a band has lyrics, if I'm trying to figure out if they're good or not, I'll imagine Tom Waits singing them in the Tom Waits style, and if the imaginary critics in my head would think it's good, then it's a good song. But if the imaginary critics would be like, Tom Waits really dropped the ball on this one, then it's an inherently bad song. I use that as a way to remove myself from my personal feelings with regards to a band. As for this jam, I mean, I'm not an Alkaline Trio fan, but I mean, it's not bad. I mean, I can swing. I can hang, you know.
Welcome back to the show, by the way.
I'm back. Yes. I'm back, yeah. Baby.
I was going to intro us back, and then John Gentile just dropped knowledge all over us. Or before I had a chance to.
My Mac crashed, and I thought Macs weren't supposed to crash. Sound guy and airman.
You were misinformed, because they definitely do.
Yeah, they're still pretty good there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, huh, that's my bad to say about the Alkaline Trio. So,
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm done on the hate train on this band. Is that, I mean, like, Alkaline Trio, I don't think they're great. And, like, Adam, like, I don't get it. I don't see what's so great about the band. But, I mean, there's a lot worse punk bands out there, a few that we're going to talk about later on this podcast. So I'm saving up the hate. I'm saving up the hate for Trio's Target.
Oh, my goodness. I can't wait for that. But as for right now, we're going to talk about Nine Inch Nails for a bit because they are coming back this year. The band hasn't been active since 2009. In the interim, Trent Reznor has been doing a lot of different things. He's been scoring movies. He won an Oscar for his work on The Social Network. He's started a band with his wife, How to Destroy Angels. They have a new album coming out next month. But apparently he's got that itch to do Nine Inch Nails again. So the band has extensive touring planned in 2013 and into 2014. So you can see the info. The band's got a new lineup. It's all on Punk News. You can check it out. Other than a few months in middle school where I was goth for a little bit. I was never a huge Nine Inch Nails fan. I think Trent Reznor's a pretty smart dude. He's got a lot going for him. It's not really my thing necessarily, but I see the appeal. Did you guys ever go through a goth phase in high school or middle school? I'm guessing not.
I'm still in my goth phase right now. I was in the Bauhaus just yesterday. But as for Nine Inch Nails, I gotta say, actually, on a side note, on Goth Records, and I swear I'm not getting payola, but I got sent a record from a label called Hardly Art called the band The Grave Babies. The name's pretty terrible. I'd never heard of them before, but it's a fresh record. Like, if you like death rock and goth, it's a cool record. So I'm just throwing that out there. As for Nine Inch Nails, you know, I see Nine Inch Nails live once. I've got two of their albums, and it's just too irritating for me. I just can't get into the music. What I do like about Trent Reznor is that he makes unique music. Not a whole lot of people are making music like him, but he pays respect to his inspirations as well. Like on the final Nine Inch Nails tour, he used to do a couple shows with Peter Murphy from Bauhaus, which was really cool. And he did a couple shows with Gary Numan and Tubeway Army, which was pretty cool. A Punk News reader pointed this out. In his new band, he's got Eric Avery, who was in King Crimson, which that's pretty wild. Chad Religion pointed that out. Or no, Mr. Spike pointed that out. Or one of them two pointed it out. I don't know. Somebody pointed it out. And anyways, I mean, like, King Crimson's a cool band, and it's very interesting to bring King Crimson into this goth industrial band, which they certainly influence all those bands. So, I mean, I'll take a listen, but I'm probably not going to love it. But, you know, it's cool. Whatever.
It doesn't feel like Nine Inch Nails was gone for very long.
No.
So I guess, you know, it's not like a huge triumphant reunion or anything like that. It's just like, you know, all right, more Nine Inch Nails stuff is happening. I think that honestly, more than anything musically interesting, I thought it's been kind of neat to watch like what Trent's been doing with digital distro and stuff like that. Definitely. You know, like they've been, because he had that Ghosts instrumental thing that he released for free, and then I think The Slip was released for free, but I don't know. That just I like an Nine Inch Nails song here or there, but I totally don't get the subculture or anything that goes with it. So, you know, someone is stoked for this.
I think Johnny Cash's version of Hurt is the best version.
Yeah, I would say I prefer his version as well. I actually grew to like the Nine Inch Nails version more because of the Johnny Cash version. Whereas I didn't really care about it necessarily before, but I definitely still prefer the Cash version for sure. All right,
cool.
Nine Inch Nails. Not the moment we've all been waiting for. We're going to talk about Reviver because they have a new album out.
Do you mean Reviver or Reviver?
Yes. I believe both pronunciations are generally acceptable, but I'll keep saying Reviver. Anyway, they have a new album out. It's out today, actually. It's called The Beauty Between. As with most or all Reviver tunes, I think you can find it somewhere online for free from Rumbletown Records or from some other means. So that's out. The band has a new video for their song Wrong Way, One Way, which features a lot of black and white and a lot of Rancid Cam and a lot of this and that and, you know, some people with bad haircuts and sleeveless shirts and that sort of thing. So if you're into that, you can check that out on Punk News as well. Despite my somewhat negative feelings about Reviver when it comes to how overbearing they can be with their politics, I actually mostly like their music. At least I did. This album, on the other hand, kind of bores me. I don't know if it's just I'm not in the right mindset to be listening to it, or it's just too similar to their older material. But I tried to listen to it once and I couldn't get through it. But I feel like, you know, it's to a lot of people who read our site and the four or so people who listen to this podcast, it's going to be one of those important records, quote unquote, that comes out in 2013. But I'm really curious about what your guys' thoughts are on it. And where the band can kind of go from here.
This is, I keep not liking what the kids like, and I don't know why. You know what? I mean, I'm going to give them a pass on this video, because I'm going to hope that this video was, like, intentionally goofy, because it totally seemed like a goofy Rancid video to me, where, like, it was all black and white, and they're all, like, big hand gestures as they're, like, you know, reading out the lyrics, and, I don't know, like, skateboards, and, okay, punk rock. Anyways, yeah, the video is goofy. While the video was playing, I didn't really mind the song, which is interesting, because I am not a Matt Canino fan. This is not an olfactory observation. I think that Latterman in particular is a totally overrated band, and I don't really get why people. I get why people like Latterman, because they are, you know, aesthetically, they do a lot of things that a lot of bands that we love do, right? So there's a lot of, you know, there's Against Me stuff that happens in Latterman. There's Hot Water Music stuff that happens in Latterman. But it's all through this big, crazy, rambly, they're having so much fun and going crazy and everyone's shouting at the same time. But I don't really think they wrote very good songs, and their records totally bored me. But I get why people liked them, because they have a lot of those elements from bands that we like. But like, Latterman was never for me. I don't get why people revere them these days. So coming out of Latterman, you know, the only kind of projects that came out of Latterman that I thought were all really that interesting was like I thought Iron Sheik was okay, but you know, Reviver, bleh, you know, Shorebirds, all the Matt Canino projects, the dude's voice just doesn't work for me. So he's, you know, vocally, he's not kind of starting off on the best foot with me in the first place, and I'm not giving him any pass because he was in the Holy Latterman. So, you know, that said, I haven't heard this record. This song, I didn't mind it when it was playing, so, you know, maybe I will like this record. I may entirely like this record, but yeah, I don't get the cult of personality that he has about him.
John Gentile, the floor is yours.
Yeah. Choo-choo! All aboard the hate train. I gotta say, I cannot get into this band. I'm gonna read some quotes from some kids. I'm not gonna name names, because I'm like, people like, introducing the first great post-Latterman record. Love this album. Definitely will end up as best of the year. This album, to me, the band approaches lyrics the way McDonald's approaches chicken nuggets. I mean, they just chop them up, mash them together, whatever way they fit, and then drop them in a vat and fry them together. Like, there seems to be, like, this music, well, first, this music is, like, bland. It doesn't challenge any, like, it doesn't challenge someone intellectually or spiritually or physically or viscerally. It just seems to be, like, a reading of a essay to people that already agree with the essay. There seems to be no timbre or no sense of how instruments work together. They just seem to be creating an emotion through the vocal expression and not the underlying emotion itself. And every single song ends with the, you know, with both of them, like, singing together. And I just can't take it, man. I mean, like, honestly, it's not bad. It's not a bad record, but it's just a bland, boring record. And I hate to be – well, I don't hate to be the hate train. But, I mean, honestly, I think some of the people in this band are actually pretty cool people. And actually, I got to say, though, Eric, is her name Erica Friaz? Is that how you say her name? Friaz? Erica.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually think her voice is actually sort of interesting. So I actually – off this record, I'm going to check out her solo record. But, like, her and the whole band together, they just all seem to be, like, there's no connection between the different instruments, and they just all seem to be trying to fake or emit an emotion through the tone, intonation of the music, rather than from what they actually say. And they seem to be so dedicated to saying what they want to say, they don't stop to actually write a good song. They just spout out, like, a freaking essay. And it just is boring and annoying, and, I gotta say, I really don't know what the kids are liking about this record. And honestly, I'm a little scared that this – I mean, well, yeah, I'm a little scared that records like this are so popular, because it's not threatening. It doesn't seem to challenge you intellectually. It doesn't seem to present any new viewpoints. So the only point of it seems to me is to scratch each other's back, which to me is self-defeating and is basically how genres become washed up and past their due date. Bam.
Ooh. I agree completely. That's how I feel about this band, and quite honestly, how I feel about the majority of bands that are playing this type of music, the quote unquote org core that some of the people who read our site like. You know, it's just, and I like a lot of music that most people probably think sucks or is like too soft or too poppy or whatever it might be. But you know, I enjoy interesting musicians that have interesting things to say, that are trying something different, that are, you know, kind of breaking the mold, so to speak. I mean, that's kind of what punk is about to me in a lot of ways. So
I agree 100%. As unpunk as, like, say, Lil Wayne or Nicki Minaj is, at least they're doing things that haven't been done before. And even if you don't like it, it challenges you to try to understand what they're doing. But this just seems to be like pancakes placed out in front of you that you've had 1,000 times before.
That's a pretty good analogy.
And I hate to be so mean to all the people in this band, because I've seen interviews with a couple of the people. I'm not going to name names, but some of the people seem like nice people, and I would just encourage them to go do their own thing, because I think, well, you know, I mean, if their point is just to like make people happy that already like this, well, you know, that's not the worst goal in the world. But if, in my opinion, if they want to make more interesting music, they kind of spread off and go do their own thing. And like I said, I am going to check out Erica Frias's album, because I think her voice is interesting, so I'll check that out. It might be bad, it might be good, I don't know, but I will check it out.
All right, cool. So I believe we're gonna do another song right now, and I'm going to present it. So to give you kind of a behind the scenes boring look into what the person who compiles and edits and assigns the reviews that go live on Pop News every week does. I get a lot of emails from bands that I've never heard of, and most of them I don't care to hear, to be honest, saying like, hey, we just made this record, check it out, great punk band. It's usually some very form-lettery general thing. But I got one the other day that caught my eye for whatever reason. And I ended up checking out the record, and I think the record's actually really good, which rarely happens on these form emails that we get, unfortunately. So the name of the band is Brain Vacation. They're from Chicago. Punk News commenter Wentz Equals Death is in this band, apparently, based on his comments. I don't know what his real name is or what he does, but that's a thing if the Punk News community is listening to this and cares about that sort of thing. He's an Amoebics fan. That is true. This record is called The Musicians. It's up for free download at their Bandcamp/website, which is brainvacation.info, and it's pretty cool. Apparently they recorded it in a basement. It's kind of got that loud, kind of washed out post-punk hardcore influence sound that's pretty big right now, with the sort of pitchforks and, you know, the, like, if you like Ceremony or Pissed Jeans or any quote unquote punk band that put out a record on Sub Pop or Matador recently, you'll probably be into this. It's got a lot of personality. It's loud. It's kind of in your face, and it's surprisingly good. So this is track 3 from the record. The name of the record is The Musicians. The name of the band is Brain Vacation, and this song is called To Weather or Not.
No!
is Iggy Pop infallible? That's the question I want to ask. Because the Stooges, or I should say Iggy and the Stooges, are releasing a new album on April 30th called Ready to Die. Not to be confused with the Notorious B.I.G. album of the same name. So you can see a teaser video on Punk News. It's for the song Scarecrow. It's this weird thing where Iggy is dressed up as a scarecrow. So the Stooges put out an album in 2003 called The Weirdness that was not very warmly received. Yeah, it's, I mean, does the world need a new Iggy and the Stooges record? I mean, is anybody really clamoring for this? Is there going to be interest? Is it going to even be good? I mean, obviously, like, those first couple of records are just, you know, you just can't fuck with those. I mean, they're perfect albums. And but it was also 40 years ago when they came out, 40 plus years ago for some of them. So I'm kind of wondering about, I mean, is this really necessary? I mean, do we, what do you guys think about this whole thing?
Go ahead.
No, I don't have a whole lot to say. I mean, it's a little bit unfair to compare like early Stooges records with, you know, whatever Iggy's kind of got going on now. I mean, that's like a whole other universe away at this point. Sure. So, but I mean, I guess, yeah, I don't think there were a ton of people that were big fans of The Weirdness or Skull Ring or any of those things. So, you know, it's going to be a record. It's probably not going to be that good. It's probably not really going to matter too much to Iggy's legacy one way or another. Cause I think that, you know, short of like, I don't know, committing some sort of atrocity, he's pretty much going to go down in history as with the Stooges, right? So,
yeah, I think so.
I would say Iggy is not infallible, and really, has he made a decent record since like Lust for Life and The Idiot? Like every record after that has had some okay songs, but no really lasting tunes on it. I've seen Iggy and the Stooges live, and I gotta say, one of the best shows you will ever see there. Still absolutely phenomenal live. So Yancey asks, do we need another Iggy and the Stooges record? And my answer is yes, if it's good. The problem is I don't think it's going to be very good. And honestly, I think it falls on Iggy's shoulders. Is like both The Weirdness and this track, The Scarecrow, the music sounds pretty good to me, but his lyrics are just so weak and so repetitive. It sounds like he wrote it in like 5 minutes, and maybe that's how he wrote all the old Stooges jams, but he doesn't have the magic juice he used to have in 1969 through 1973 to just come up with awesome lyrics on the spot. So we need to spend more time on them. And honestly, that was the downfall of The Weirdness. It's just the music was great, just the lyrics were so whack. But I will say is that, and I don't want to be that guy, but I've got the vinyl version of The Weirdness, and that actually has a bonus side C. On the side C is a song called O Solo Mio, not O Solo Mio, the Italian song, but O Solo Mio. And it's an original Stooges composition. It is as good as pretty much any track, or almost as good as pretty much any track on Funhouse. So you can get this, like, hear that song on YouTube or buy the record if you want. It's a phenomenal song. So when it all does click together, they still do have the juice. I just think they just don't spend enough time on it, frankly. And I think everyone's scared to say, Iggy, you need some better lyrics than that. Some more genuine lyrics that actually say what you're feeling rather than just these lyrics that sound like they were written in a half hour. So I don't think the record's going to be good. I'll definitely listen to it. I'll probably even get it just to complete my collection. But I would say if people are looking for some newer good Stooges stuff, a little while ago they put out a record set called Live at All Tomorrow's Parties, funnily enough. It's them doing all of Raw Power and some other Stooges jams, including some unreleased ones from after the Raw Power sessions, and it's phenomenal. It's great. So if you want new Stooges jams, get that, because it's got live versions of unreleased Stooges jams. So
that's a good recommendation. I'll have to check that out myself.
Yeah, it's real good.
All right, cool. Yeah, I don't have high hopes for this, which I kind of outlined in my intro. But, I mean, what are you going to do? It's not going to set the world on fire. It's probably not going to offend anyone. It's not going to, you know, desecrate the legacy that the Stooges and Iggy have or anything like that, kind of like Adam said. So whatever, it's fine. They can do what they want as far as I'm concerned. All right, so lastly, we have a new video from the Bronx for Youth Wasted. which they premiered, and I think they're the first band I've ever seen do this. They premiered this this new video on Playgirl.com, the video features a lot of exotic dancers, all of them male, including the band themselves, and it's pretty funny. It's kind of cool, and the song is great. We talked about the record a couple weeks ago, and I think the record's really awesome. So if you want to check out that video, it's on Punk News. Search for The Bronx, and yeah, it's good to have The Bronx back. I still prefer mariachi, but this is cool. Like, I like that they're doing stuff again for sure.
Yeah, I know. This record has really grown on me. I like it. The video is a lot of fun. In that, like, it's got like a good joke, I guess. Trying to do with it. So that's something, I guess. I don't have a whole lot to say about The Bronx. I have a feeling that by the end of the year, I'm still gonna like this record quite a bit, because it's like a nice solid little rock record. But you know, they're definitely, I guess, outside of like wacky videos like this, the danger factor is gone.
From this
band.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you wouldn't see a video like this made for Heart Attack American back in the day, for sure.
And you know what, though? I feel that, like, when Heart Attack American, when that first Bronx record came out, you wouldn't even find a picture of this band anywhere. Seeing them play on stage wearing, like, that goofy baseball cap that is Matt his name? Matt's wearing in the video. Oof.
It's a long way from where they were, for sure.
The bloom is off that rose, right?
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah, I'll say this video is pretty much the most punk rock thing I think we've had on this podcast, except for Iggy, of course, and except for Flag. I think it's punk rock because, like, I don't think a band has ever, like, I don't think a male band has ever done like a video of like them and like Chippendales type dancer guys, and it's interesting, and I'm not sure what they're saying in it, so it's challenging me as a viewer and as a listener, and so I think it's much more punk rock than other bands we've talked about on this podcast, even though it's a much more simpler concept. They're not telling you what we all agree on. They're saying, here's something to ponder. What do you make of it? And
my gut interpretation of the video the first time I watched it was that they were trying to subvert the stereotype of rock bands and music videos that use a lot of gratuitous shots of women, you know, objectify them, that sort of thing. They were going to objectify dudes and also themselves instead.
Don't you think it's much more clever to do it this way than just to ramble off an essay?
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, people.
Yes, I absolutely do. If Reviver had made a video for this song, it would probably be an essay.
It's just like a picture of an essay. You know?
Yeah, it just kind of scrolls and scrolls and scrolls. Maybe it doesn't scroll. Maybe it's just a photo of, like, you know, like nothing that moves. It's like that Replacements video. So cool. I think that's it for the stories. I believe Mr. Gentile has a song, and then that'll be it for the show.
I've got a pretty massive jam. Speaking of things that don't move, is way back in 1992, a band called Sleep, who was one of the, I guess, first or most well-known stoner rock bands, recorded an album called Dope Smoker. It was actually shelved to like 1999. What makes Dope Smoker so special is that it's a one-song, 61-minute track, and it's not like a bunch of songs put together. It's one song at 61 minutes, and it is one of the heaviest, most awesome songs you'll ever hear. Southern Lord just reissued Dope Smoker with some remastered sound. It sounds pretty good. They've got it on vinyl and CD. It's fantastic. We're not going to play all 61 minutes, but Southern Lord has issued a free edit of the song. It's only about 5 minutes. So as to Sleep doing Dope Smoker. So hear me, brethren. Grab yon chainmail. Grab yon battle helm. Grab yon war axe. For upon the morn, we travel to the Holy Land. The journey be deadly, fraught with peril and fiends, but our resolve shall see the way. Our steed shall be massive riffage. Our chariots shall be heavier than lead drums, and our shields shall be the expansion of yon mind. Hark! I bring ye Sleep. Hark! I bring ye Dope Smoker.
And that's going to do it for this week's Punk News Podcast. Thanks to Adam and John for joining me on the roundtable, as always. Thanks to Nerman, our wonderful producer, for recording the show, editing the show, and making us sound far more professional, or maybe not professional, just better than we deserve to sound. Thanks to the bands for providing us music, Sleep, Brain Vacation, and Dead to Rights. Thanks to Scotty at Death to False Hope for the theme music. As always, you can send us your feedback via Twitter or Facebook at Punk News, facebook.com/punknews. Podcast at punknews.org is our show email address. And you can also leave us comments on the site itself at punknews.org. So that's all we got. We will be back next week. And hopefully it's a good one. We'll see you then. Until then, this has been the Punk News Podcast for the week of February 26th, 2013.